Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Gerrymandering gave Republicans control of the House of Representatives in 2012, even though they won 1.4 million fewer votes than Democrats. It was a huge win for the Republicans' 2010 Redistricting Majority Project, or REDMAP. That was a $30 million strategy. According to today's guest, David Daley, REDMAP was a push to target states where the legislature draws districts, flips as many chambers as possible, takes control of the process, and then redraws the lines. So where are we 6 years later? Well, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, a new report on extreme partisan gerrymandering shows that Democrats need to win by a margin of 10 or 11 points in order to take back the House. More specifically, Democrats will have to win big in states like Michigan, Ohio, and North Carolina. And then the Supreme Court declined to rule on two key gerrymandering cases this year, sending them back to state courts for review, and voters have put redistricting reform on state ballots in five states. Joining us to talk about what we can expect in November and beyond is David Daley, Senior Fellow at Fair Vote, a nonpartisan organization advancing electoral reforms. David is author of a book about gerrymandering called Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. We had David on to talk about that book when it came out, and he's former editor-in-chief of Salon.com. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, it's great to have you. When we had you on to talk about your book, Rat Effed, we talked a lot about red mapping, and we'll revisit that on today's show. But let's talk about where we are, what we can expect in November. This new Brennan Center for Justice report shows that Democrats need to win by a margin of almost 11 points in order to take back the House. Do you agree with that margin?
I think 11 is a little bit on the high side, but I think it's certainly within that realm of sort of 6 to 9 points, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. The House of Representatives is supposed to be the people's house. It's supposed to be the chamber of government that is closest and sort of most reflective and reactive to changes in the popular will. And because of gerrymandering, it has largely become insulated from that. You quite clearly are going to have some kind of a big blue wave this fall. You can see it in the special elections. You can see it in double-digit swings in red states towards blue candidates. You can see it in the number of Republicans who have decided simply not to seek a reelection this year in the U.S. House. But the big question this fall is going to be whether that blue wave can get up over the red firewall that is built by gerrymandering. And so far, the red wall has held pretty solidly. If you look at the results in Ohio 12 last week, which they're still counting, it's very, very close. But, Democrats had that sort of big wave push. I'm not sure it was an extra 10 points that the Democratic candidate got there, but it was an awful lot of it was a big improvement over previous years, but still not quite enough. You saw it in Virginia last fall, in which Democratic candidates for the House of Delegates there get 225,000 more votes than Republicans, and yet Republicans still hold on to the chamber. So gerrymandering remains a serious problem for Democrats to get past.
Let's talk more specifically about cases in November, states in November. This Brennan Center for Justice report says that Democrats have to win big in a number of states, and they specifically point to Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, and Texas. What strikes you about what needs to happen or what's happening in those states?
The amazing thing about these states is that you haven't seen any give in those maps over the course of this entire decade since Republicans drew them and enacted them back in 2011. If you look at five crucial Midwestern states and also North Carolina, so Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, those five states send 48 Republicans and 21 Democrats to Congress, you would imagine those states being much more competitive than that. Those are crucial bellwether swing states. And yet it's more than 2-1 in all of these states. North Carolina's congressional delegation is 10-3. Ohio is 12-4. Michigan, 9-5. Republican. And the Democrats have not picked up a single seat in any of those states, not in 2012, not in 2014, and not in 2016. The only seat that has moved in any of those five states this entire decade is when Connor Lamb wins the special election in Pennsylvania earlier this year. Otherwise, Democrats have been completely shut out in all of those swing states, in which swing states ain't got no swing.
So these maps were drawn in 2011, and they haven't moved since then?
That's exactly right. In all of these states, the lines have just held completely solid for Republicans. And each of those elections have been a very different elections. I mean, 2012 is a good Democratic year. Democrats were not able to make any gains in those states. In Michigan, Democratic candidates get 225,000 more votes than Republican congressional candidates, and yet it's a 9-5 delegation. In Pennsylvania, it's almost 100,000 more votes than Republican candidates, and yet it's a 13-5 delegation. And Democrats simply haven't been able to make any headway. 2014, again, is a bad year for Democrats. It's a good year for Republicans, but there are very few gains to be made on these maps because Republicans did such a good job of maximizing all of these seats with the maps in 2011. They were able to pick up a seat in North Carolina, moving North Carolina from a 9-4 Republican into the 10-3 column. But otherwise, it has been these maps have done exactly what the Republicans intended them to do.
David, are state activists and state politicians talking about gerrymandering?
They most certainly are. I mean, I had to give my book a vulgar title because back a couple of years ago, I think this was a topic that put people to sleep and reminded them of civics class back in eighth grade or something. And now I think that people have looked around the country. They've looked at their own state capitals, at their own member of Congress, and said, wait a second, if we are such a closely divided country, why is it that Republicans not only control all of Washington, but, you know, 68 of 99 state house chambers around the country, with, you know, often with fewer votes? And folks have come to realize the importance of gerrymandering in these district lines, I think, in an entirely new way. You have had incredible citizen engagement in so many of these states, the Fair Districts PA movement in Pennsylvania, the Moral Monday movement in North Carolina, Voters Not Politicians in Michigan, which is an amazing group that has actually got an initiative on the ballot this fall that would establish an independent commission for a drawing of lines in that state. And it's been a popular nonpartisan issue across lines. I think it's a question of fairness, of responsiveness in our elections, and everybody ought to be in favor of the side with the most votes winning.
Well, I ask you if this is getting more attention at the state level, because if I remember correctly, in your book, Rat Effed, you write that a number of politicians in gerrymandered states, or in states that were about to be gerrymandered, approached Nancy Pelosi to talk about this issue, and she wrote them off and really didn't take them seriously.
I think the Democrats fell asleep in 2010. There is no other way around it. Democrats, after the 2008 elections, they thought that they were riding a demographic wave that was going to leave them in control not only of Washington but of states around the country for a long time to come. And they did not understand the importance of redistricting in 2010. They did not invest in it. Even when Karl Rove writes in the Wall Street Journal in March of 2010 about Red Map, about what the Republicans are going to try to do. He lays out their plan. He says, we are going to invest in local races. We are going to flip state legislative chambers and in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Texas, in Indiana. We are going to have every seat at the table when it comes to drawing these new lines, and we're going to lock you out of power for the next decade. I mean, this is a major Republican strategist writing on the op-ed page of one of the country's biggest newspapers, and the Democratic leadership simply didn't see it, didn't get it, couldn't play defense in these state legislative, in these local races, even when the Republicans laid out their playbook and told them what they were going to do. It was political incompetence and ineptitude at the absolute highest levels. Democrats have since woken up. I think it took them probably too long to wake up, but they are now, moving as quickly as they can to try and recover from this. You've got Eric Holder and Barack Obama running something called the National Democratic Redistricting Committee, and they are investing seriously in, down ballot races and actually trying to, contest at the state legislative level in a state like Ohio, where the state auditor and the state secretary of state are two key offices because they hold a position on the state redistricting commission. Republicans understand that, and they invested in those races back in 2010. Democrats now finally understand that. You might notice that those were two of the races Barack Obama endorsed a candidate in last week.
And David, just to elaborate on this a bit more, why did the Democrats drop the ball on this, especially after these politicians approached Nancy Pelosi to warn her about this and to ask her to do something about this? I mean, they tend to drop the ball on so many issues, but what specifically about gerrymandering? Why didn't they get it? When you talk to politicians, what do they tell you?
Boy, it's such a good question. I mean, they tell me that they whistled past the graveyard and that they... I think one of the geniuses behind what the Republicans did is a guy named Chris Jankowski, and he's a strategist I write about in this book a lot. And he runs something called the Republican State Leadership Committee that is responsible for coming up with Red Map and enacting it nationwide. And they understood that state government provided them a roadmap back to power. If you think back to 2008, Republicans had gotten wiped out. There's a Democratic supermajority in the U.S. Senate. There's a majority behind Speaker Pelosi in the House. You've got a blue map as far as the eye can see, and then you have Barack Obama in the White House. And Republicans didn't know what to do. They settled on redistricting because they didn't have another path forward. And they understood that 2010 represented a real opportunity, that 2008 may have been a historic election, but the 2010 provided the opportunity to draw maps. And they reinvented gerrymandering, really. And I think that this is what the Democrats missed in many ways, that gerrymandering in crucial ways is the oldest political trick in the book, right? I mean, it's named after Elbridge Gerry, the governor of Massachusetts back in the 1810s. Politicians have been trying to draw these district lines in a way as to give themselves political advantage for as long as they've been politicians. So what the Republicans did was use this as a means to locking in partisan advantage for a whole decade, and they were able to use amazing new computer technology and map-making software and big data that simply wasn't available in previous years. They reimagined gerrymandering. And in many ways, the Democrats had an absolute failure of imagination at just that crucial moment.
David Daley is senior fellow at FairVote, a nonpartisan organization advancing electoral reforms. He's also author of a book about gerrymandering called Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. And this book is really amazing. It gives you the behind-the-scenes look at what actually happened and how the Republicans were able to claim a mandate in the House without a majority of the voters. If you have any questions for David about gerrymandering, luckily, it is now getting a lot more attention, but look what happened. I mean, Republicans took over so many legislatures across the country, and we saw a number of anti-choice, anti-union, voter ID laws, so many laws pass as a result of gerrymandering. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you live in a gerrymandering district, we'd love to hear from you. If your area, your state has taken on gerrymandering, we'd love to hear how you did it and what is the result. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. David, as you said, when this happened, a lot of people weren't really familiar with gerrymandering. How do you think the media has really covered this? Because as you write in your book, gerrymandering allowed the Republicans to claim a mandate without a majority of the voters. This was the first time since 1972, and only the second time since World War II, that the party with the most votes did not win the most seats. And yet we are constantly told we are so divided in this country, even though almost 100 million people didn't vote in the presidential election, and the Republicans are in power, at least in the House, even though they didn't get a majority of the votes. How do you think the media covers this issue?
That's a great question. I think that the media has dropped the ball on gerrymandering a lot. I think that the media has acted as if this is something that both sides do.
Right.
And it is something that both sides have done in the past. But what the Republicans did in 2010 and 2011 was completely change the rules and the game. This is not, you know, this is not Elbridge Gerry's gerrymander anymore. This is a high-tech gerrymander designed intentionally to produce results in which Republicans can win huge majorities even with fewer votes. And I think that just as the Democrats were slow to realize what had gone on here, that the media was also slow on the pickup. They have gotten better. I think that you now see voting rights and a democracy as a beat, you know, at many major publications. I think NPR has done this, the New York Times, the Huffington Post. You are seeing more coverage of these issues. But there's, you know, something really dangerous is afoot here. I mean, if 2012 repeats itself in 2018 and Democrats once again get more votes for the U.S. House, but because of gerrymandering they're not able to take back the chamber, you will have Republicans in charge of the White House, the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House, all with fewer votes. And you'll have a Supreme Court that is tipping towards a conservative majority, with four of the five conservative justices appointed by a president who did not win the popular vote. We've got some serious questions about how this a democracy is functioning structurally that we have got to be talking about.
Yeah, well, it's something that Nancy McLean talks about, and she was on Bill Maher a couple weeks ago,
yes.
So she's starting to get nationwide attention. But she constantly says we need to talk about the fact that the minority is in control and the minority rules, and we need to talk about what that means and how to get out of it.
I think that's exactly right, and it is just as big a problem at the state level as it has been at the national level. I mean, if you look at what's happening in North Carolina right now with the legislature attempting to, you know, take away powers of an elected Democratic governor, of the interference in judicial races. If you look at what's happening in West Virginia right now, in which a Republican legislature has just impeached the entire Democratic Supreme Court of that state and removed most of them from office and will assumedly replace them themselves. And if you look at what gerrymandered state legislatures do around the country, the first thing they do is go after voting rights. So the rush of voter ID laws that we've seen since 2010 and 2012 is largely, happened in these gerrymandered states. And then the next thing they do is go after women's rights and then after labor rights. So there is a policy effect of this as well. And in state after state where Republicans are able to enact extreme agendas with fewer votes, citizens have been unable to do anything about it at the ballot box.
We just had a caller who can't stand the line, Sherry from Berkeley, and it sounds like she was almost, just kind of shocked by all of this. How is this legal? We ask you this question every time you're on the show.
It is legal because we redraw these lines every 10 years after the census, and it is designed for fairness. Ironically enough, it's designed to ensure that every district within a state has equal population. And legislatures in most states have the authority and the power to do this. It's in the Constitution of most states that state legislatures have the job of drawing these lines. Of course, when you allow the people to draw the lines who have the most vested interest in how those lines are drawn, you are not necessarily going to get a fair process. And what we have seen in this era of a sophisticated map-making technology and big data that is able to, crunch not only all the public record data sets that are out there, meaning your voter registration, which elections you vote in, what kind of a car you drive, but all of the census data about your zip code and your demographics and your and all of that, but also all of these private databases. So everything you click on the internet, your social media likes, your purchases online, entire clouds worth of consumer preferences, they're able to draw now such precise and specific surgical lines. And they look funny on a map, but there is intent behind every single one of those turns. And so far, it's all been deemed entirely legal. The U.S. Supreme Court has never said that partisan gerrymandering violates the Constitution.
I remember in your book, David, you actually drove in various gerrymandered districts. And if you look at some of these gerrymandered maps, it's like a child drew it. It goes up and then to the left and down and across, and it just doesn't make sense. It's all over the place. Although it does make sense, right, to the people who are drawing them.
It makes perfect sense to the people
doing it. It makes perfect sense, right. Well, and also to add, so Sherry's question, how is this legal?
Right.
Again, just to explain this, I think it's so important to continually revisit this. As you said, Karl Rove in the Wall Street Journal wrote an op-ed in March 2010, and he wrote, "If you can control redistricting, you can control Congress." And in your book, you write that at that time, Republican operatives set their sights on states where politicians are in charge of redrawing the lines. And newly elected legislatures with Republican majorities in states like Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Ohio spent weeks behind closed doors working on new maps. So why are they allowed to spend this time behind closed doors redrawing these maps?
Oh, it's horrible, right? It's the fox guarding the hen house behind closed doors. I mean, in Ohio, they went off-site and they actually called it the bunker. They rented a suite at the DoubleTree Hotel for about 2 months, and they called it the bunker. And they would send emails back and forth to each other. I meet you at the bunker later. In Wisconsin, it was the map room, and it was a very secure conference room in a politically connected law firm in Madison, Wisconsin. And because they were in a law firm, Republicans who were drawing those lines claimed attorney-client privilege for the maps that they were drawing. They were able to do this because they had complete control and all of the seats at the table. So in most states, it's the state legislature and the governor who have control over drawing the lines. And when there's divided government, or when Republicans hold one branch and Democrats hold another branch, or and somebody else maybe holds the governorship, then everybody has a seat at the table and everybody has to kind of find a way to come to some sort of compromise. What the Republicans did in 2010 was ensure that the Democrats would be locked out. And once the Democrats didn't have a seat, Republicans were able to take the table behind closed doors and do pretty much whatever they wanted to in all of these states. And we have seen the results in election after election. It's been perfect for them.
Have the Democrats ever done anything like this?
Oh, sure. Democrats in Maryland in 2010 did the same kind of high-tech gerrymander. They took a 6-2 Democratic state and they made it a 7-1 Democratic state. And their emails there, you know, once again, are very, very clear at what they're doing. They attempted first to make it an 8-0 state and to shut Republicans out completely. And as they drew those maps, they thought that they might be spreading their voters a little bit too thin so that if there was a wave year coming, they might lose seats and they would lose incumbent seats. So the incumbents who would go down in those years weren't too happy about that. So Democrats played it safe and they went for a 7-1 map there. And that 7-1 map has held ever since 2012. But if you look at this last cycle, Maryland is really the only state that the Democrats were able to do this in. And they took, you know, I'm certainly not defending or excusing that behavior. I'm simply trying to, you know, lay out on a scoreboard what happened. Democrats took that one seat in Maryland that they, you know, probably had no additional right to. What the Republicans did was they managed to draw themselves ruby red delegations from Michigan, from Ohio, from Pennsylvania, from North Carolina. And in all of these states, we're able to control the congressional delegation and to control the state house and Senate, oftentimes with fewer votes. And oftentimes it's super majorities in these places with fewer votes. So while Democrats have done this, the scale of what happened in 2010 is not equal but by any means.
David Daley is senior fellow at Fair Vote and author of Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. On today's Your Call, we are talking about gerrymandering, what happened in 2012, and what we can expect in November. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about efforts to reform the VA. There's a new ProPublica investigation out about three members of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club who are secretly shaping the administration's veterans policies. They don't have any experience in the military or the government. And VA problems like long wait times, huge patient backlogs really began under George W. Bush. So we'll talk about what it will take to fix these chronic problems. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about gerrymandering, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. David Daley is a senior fellow at Fair Vote, a nonpartisan organization that works to advance electoral reforms. He's also the author of a book about gerrymandering called Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. Let's hear from GS in South Lake Tahoe. Hi, GS. Welcome to the show.
Very much. Yeah, you've already touched on a lot of the things that I had on my list here. Pelosi not doing enough. States using high-tech computers to draw boundaries that just absolutely decimate the power of, you know, various unlikable groups to Republicans and such. But anyway, this, just to confirm, the states do individually determine district boundaries. Now, some states, including California, determine district lines by objective citizens' boards or commissions, where they're not made up of legislatures, you know, controlled by one party or another, but by you know, a sprinkling of citizens, maybe a Green or two, maybe a Democratic Socialist or two, but they're chosen to represent ordinary people, you know, throughout the state, not any particular district or party. Anyway, so in California, citizens commissions, or in California and a sprinkling of other states, citizens commissions draw these boundaries. Computers are not involved. It's people who look at the maps and try to draw boundaries that include, you know, more or less similar populations and so forth. At any rate, let's go to the other thing. Just if you want to blow your mind and just look at some of these gerrymandered states, go into your favorite browser, call up wikipedia.org, en.wikipedia.org for English. And then once you get in there, look for that little magnifying glass, click on that to search for gerrymandering. And then I say a browser because then you can pinch and spread so you can actually examine these states closely. And in particular, the worst example I see quickly is Illinois. The Illinois 4th Congressional District. Some of these even have funny names. The 4th District in Illinois has the little designation, the earmuffs. Earmuffs. And then when you look at the districts that have been drawn, it does actually kind of look like a headset or earmuffs. And how did they get that way? Well, you know, that's what you're talking about. And then if you go up four or so from that, you can look at the California districts. But the main thing is at the very bottom of that table entry, it does say that when the Democrats had their chance, and I don't know, maybe they were representing more of the people, and this is before the computer program, they ran unopposed in 2004, but that's our... Anyway, the district that's pictured...
GS, I want to get David to respond, and thank you for that. I just checked out the Wikipedia page, and yeah, everybody should check out what these maps look like. Again, it's like a kid just took a crayon and said, here's my picture... turn this into a district. We've had you on, David, talking about what happened in California. And this is interesting because ProPublica investigated this Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission and found that Democrats tried to influence the districts drawn by sending in groups to comment on the maps that had ties to the Democratic Party. And in 2012, Dems in California gained 4 seats. We had a member on that commission on the show, and they said that they handled the attempts as well as they could. What are your thoughts about what's happening in California and then the influence that the Democrats tried to have on the districts?
I think that California, the commission there, is one of the greatest examples in the country of what can happen when citizens get together and force a change in the process. This is adopted via referendum back in 2010, and it's in many ways a model legislation for how a state can go ahead and draw districts with and have it be drawn by citizens and by citizens that represent all kinds of different political backgrounds. Now, you will never get redistricting to be completely insulated from politics. And Democrats did an awful lot to try and astroturf that process. They created phony groups and sent them into public hearings and, you know, recommended maps. And I don't think that there is any evidence that those efforts worked or that the independent commissioners were swayed by them at all. But it certainly is another example of just how important these lines are to politicians. You know, a lot of the times, you know, folks in the media or other politicians will, you know, discount the importance of gerrymandering or district lines. And then you see how the party's top strategists are all involved in the work. And then you see how hard, you know, both sides work behind closed doors to try to have influence over the process. And you say, well, maybe there's a little bit going on there that they're not particularly interested in admitting. There was one other thing that the caller mentioned that I just wanted to jump in on. He was talking about Illinois and the 4th Congressional District there, the earmuffs district. That is a voting rights district. The Voting Rights Act requires that there be fair minority representation. And that district is essentially a couple of Latino neighborhoods in Chicago that would not be able to have a Latino represent them in office if that district wasn't drawn that way. So sometimes partisan gerrymandering is a terrible thing. Other times you can look at these districts and it is simply a question of fairness and of voting rights.
Well, thank you for the phone call. We have a couple of emails from listeners. One listener writes, can you provide telephone numbers or information about outreach committees that we can connect with in Michigan, North Carolina, and Ohio? Otherwise, you're preaching to the choir. What are your thoughts about how people can actually get involved in this? This call, listener's also talking about get out the vote.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's an amazing group in Michigan called Voters Not Politicians that started a petition drive, and they're going to have redistricting reform on the ballot this year. They are really easy to find on the internet or on Twitter. And if your callers want any extra information about them that they can't find, my email is up on my Twitter account as well. I'm also really super easy to find. There are amazing groups happening in all these states. There's, Fair Districts PA. There's one of Virginia. In Virginia, there's groups in North Carolina, probably a half dozen of them. I mean, Common Cause, the League of Women Voters in many of these states are leading the way. These are, solid nonpartisan efforts in all of these states. So I would certainly encourage the choir to get it out there and get involved. Absolutely.
Well, the other thing that this listener is suggesting, and my computer froze, so I didn't read his mm-hmm. or her email correctly, and that is, this caller is suggesting that listeners and take part in get out the vote campaigns in other states. So there's various organizations that allow you to call voters, for example, in Michigan, to remind people to go to the polls.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, if you are living in a district that is not particularly competitive and you want to get involved, there's groups like Flippable, there's groups like Sister District, Swing Left. There's, a lot of places I think that are eager to match folks who have a little extra energy and enthusiasm and want to channel it into races that might have a little bit more significance.
Well, thank you for that email. In fact, we should do a show about this, so we'll put that on our list. Thank you for that. And then Michael writes in, the super tight race is still going on for Ohio's 12th district. Have you seen the map? And he sent us over mm-hmm. a photo of this map that once again goes over to the left and then takes a hard right and goes down another very gerrymandered district.
Ohio is one of the most gerrymandered states in the country. I mean, it's long been considered a bellwether, and yet it elects 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. So 75% of the seats going to one side, even though it is a 50-50 state. They did that by, if you look at, I believe it's Ohio's first district, which is amazing to look at as well. That is the long, thin district known as the Mistake by the Lake, which essentially runs across the very top of Ohio from Cleveland all the way out to Toledo and tries to vacuum up as many of the Democratic voters and to connect as many of the African American neighborhoods in those cities as they possibly can, cram as many of the Democrats as possible into as few seats as possible, and then the Republicans drew lines that, lock themselves in. Once you've packed all of the Democrats into as few districts as possible, it's easy to, carve up the remaining ones for yourselves. So Democrats win those races with about 80% of the vote. Republicans win their districts with about 60% of the vote, but they have, many more of them. It's why the Brennan Center and others suggest that, it's about a 10-point wave that would be necessary to put all of those seats in play. There was a pretty good wave a week or so ago in Ohio's 12th, and yet it still apparently wasn't quite enough, and that's going to be the big question this year.
Right, but it was very close, right?
Certainly.
I'm just looking at the results here. The Republican, 101,772 votes. The Dem, 100,208, and the Green, 1,129.
As close as you can possibly imagine, right? I think we're going to have a lot more of those.
David, you brought up people of color. Can you talk about how Republicans and Democrats gerrymander people of color? And what really stands out for you?
I think two things. And the first is there's two different sets of case law on this at the Supreme Court. There's partisan gerrymandering, which the court has never defined or found a standard for. And then there's racial gerrymandering, and the court has said you cannot do that. Then you overlay onto the top of that two other things. The Voting Rights Act of 1982, which says when you can draw a majority-minority seat and ensure African-American or Latino representation in Congress, you should. And then on top of that, the increasing partisan polarization of the country and the fact that most minorities vote a Democratic. So what Republicans were able to do, especially in the South in the 2000 and 2010 cycles, was draw lines that essentially were racial gerrymanders, but that they were able to say were partisan gerrymanders, right? Because they know that most African Americans vote a Democratic. So they intentionally created a paper trail while packing all of these Democratic voters into as few districts as possible. And North Carolina is a great example of this. And they said, oh, no, we're not doing a racial gerrymander. That's illegal. You can't possibly think, oh, we would do that. Oh, we're doing a good old-fashioned partisan gerrymander here, and there's no problem there. Now, on the other hand, Democrats throughout the 70s, the 80s, even into the 1990s, used African-American voters in the South in their own way, right? I mean, they would kind of spread them out as strategically as they could, so that they essentially contributed to the election of white Democrats in these states, and you saw very few African Americans across the South until the mid 1990s, and that again is not an accident. In the 1990 redistricting cycle, there's something called the Unholy Alliance, and it's a bargain that's reached in many states across the South between Republicans and African-American Democrats who work together. Republicans bought them bought the NAACP and other groups in the South computers and map-making software and encouraged them to draw districts that would increase African-American representation across the South, all while knowing that districts in those states that elected African Americans in the South would also bleach all of the surrounding seats whiter and more Republican. And that becomes key to the 1994 Gingrich Revolution that gives Republicans the House for the first time in a long time, and also drives the number of African American seats in the House to its highest number since Reconstruction.
Wow. David Daley is author of Rat Effed, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy. He's also senior fellow at Fair Vote, an organization that works to advance electoral reforms, and we clearly need so many of them. Let's go to another caller, Jeff in Berkeley. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Great show. Really great show. And I've looked it up on the web about the book. Here's the question, and it comes down to critical thinking among voters and just people in general, that people that would basically subscribe to the value of a democracy. I belong to a health club. It's in Berkeley. It costs money to join. The cars in the parking lot are nice. If you ask most people on this subject, their response would be, huh? And when Mr. Daley brought up about bringing this whole subject to, he mentioned Nancy Pelosi, but somebody in the Democratic Party about what was coming with gerrymandering, I think the same response was, huh? I mean, why are people not more aware of this? I realize it's complex, everything that's going on, but that's the question. How do you make the average voter in the United States more aware of these things? That's the question.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. For one, we need to bring back social studies and civics classes.
Amen.
David, we did a show about this a couple of weeks ago. We need to teach these things in school, because when we do, that results, we hope, in an engaged citizenry. And studies show that kids who learn about these issues in school take part in community activities after high school.
That's where it starts.
But what would you, how would you answer Jeff's question and frustration?
No, I think you're right. I think all of this begins with civic education. After that, there is a huge responsibility on the media to cover these issues fairly and honestly, and not with, you know, some kind of, you know, both sides do it lens.
Exactly.
And on top of that, I mean, I think we all have a responsibility as citizens to follow what's happening. And what you see in so many of these states is that one side has more votes, the other side has got a lock on the power. And this is not by accident. This is structural. It was planned this way. And I think we all have to be talking about our democracy and the kind of democracy we want to have. Because, I mean, again, if Republicans do manage to hold on to the House thanks to gerrymandering this fall, and I'd say it's probably 50-50 at this point in time, they will have a hammer lock on Washington, but also all of these state legislatures, and it will have been attained with fewer votes. And there's a responsibility on us as citizens to, you know, speak up and demand a system that, you know, is different, that is fair. You have seen in Maine folks moving towards ranked choice voting. There is an amazing bill that Congressman Beyer of Virginia has put forth called the Fair Representation Act that would, you know, move us towards, you know, multi-member districts for Congress that would, you know, take away a lot of the power of maps. We have to do some big, serious, creative thinking about how we have fairness and fair elections in this country.
But meantime, California is on fire. I mean, we don't have much time, right? I mean, climate change, there's just so many issues. We are running out of time. So, I mean, what are your thoughts about where we're at and what people can do? We've got the two cases where the Supreme Court sent two key gerrymandering cases back to state courts for review. What do you think? How will that play out? And that's Wisconsin?
Wisconsin and Maryland. Those two cases got punted back to a lower courts. This was the opportunity. The opportunity was this year, because Justice Kennedy had said that he was interested in trying to solve a partisan gerrymandering, and these two cases were tailor-made for him to step in, and yet Justice Hamlet still looked at them and threw his hands up in the air, and then he retired. So not only was there no decision on those two cases, but when they come back to the court in a year or in 18 months, it's going to be a different court. So I don't think you can necessarily count on those cases or the one that is kind of on the runway for landing at the court from North Carolina and think that those are going to be a solution. State Supreme Courts are a potential solution. Pennsylvania, back in January, their state Supreme Court overturned their entire congressional map as an illegal partisan gerrymander, using a fair and free election clause in their state constitution. And what had been a 13-5 locked-in Republican map could very well be a 9-9 map this year. Democrats could pick up four seats there that could get them a big chunk of the way towards the 23 that they need for control of the House. There's ballot initiatives in Michigan and also in Utah, Colorado, and Missouri this fall on independent commissions. So there is an awful lot happening on that front. And there are governor races. And governors have a seat at the table in Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Colorado. And if Democrats are able to hold on to Colorado and Pennsylvania, if they are able to flip Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, or Florida, they will earn themselves back a seat at the table in those states. So there is a lot going on. But there is a lot going on the other way as well. I mean, a key piece of this is the U.S. Census. The next set of maps will be drawn again after the 2020 census. Republicans have been working hard to add a citizenship question onto the census. The goal of that is to damage the reliability of the count in all of these key states. So we are coming up on 2021. There is a lot of gamesmanship, but these elections in 2018 are going to be the last chance in many cases for Democrats to win back seats at the table for a redistricting next time. And the maps drawn in 2021, folks, those are going to be in place until 2031. So wow, we're talking about a generation here.
Well, Ruby's got a great question. She says, wouldn't it be more accessible to us to call this partisan redistricting? She says the name gerrymander is an instant turnoff.
Sounds good to me.
Just
Or you could just call it rat effed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and if you want to learn more about how this works and what goes on behind the scenes, David Daley's Rat Effed really is a must read. Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. David is also senior fellow at Fair Vote, a nonpartisan organization working to advance electoral reforms. David, thank you so much for all of your work. We definitely would love to have you back before
Always
November
a pleasure.
To talk more about this.
Anytime at all.
All right. Thanks for your work. Keep it up. Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about what's happening at the VA. A ProPublica investigation called The Shadow Rulers of the VA focuses on three members of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club who are secretly shaping the administration's veterans policies. None of these guys have ever served in the military or the government. Documents show that the VA problems, things like long wait times and huge patient backlogs, began under George W. Bush. So what will it take to reform and fix the VA's chronic problems? Your Call is produced at KALW in San Francisco. If you'd like to podcast our show, you can head over to yourcallradio.org. You can also sign up to find out what's coming up. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line, yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.